Views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Alrighty, welcome back. Yeah, welcome to the big broadcast right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. Well, you know, it's Wednesday at 6 o'clock. This is the time of the week we asked you to consider this. And joining me in the studio is Rob Washburn for our weekly installment. Of course, he's our community producer, a professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College, and a good friend of mine, and glad to have him here. And I don't know, we're heading into summer. This is our third summer, I think, isn't it, Rob? I'm not even positive on that one.
Seems like forever, Dave.
I know, and attached it to hip. Joining us in the studio, Dean Huswick, who is the man responsible for Parks and Recreation for the town of Cobourg. He's newly appointed, or he's been there for a little while. We'll talk to him about that. Before we get started, as always, here's our song related to the conversation. Here's MacArthur Park.
For us, girl, it ran one step ahead as we followed in the dance. Between the parted pages and were pressed in love's hot fevered iron like a striped pair of pants. This park is melting in the dark, all the sweet green icing flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it, 'cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again. Recall the yellow cotton dress foaming like a wave on the ground around your knees. The birds like tender babies in your hands, and the old men playing checkers by the trees. This park is melting in the dark, all the sweet green icing flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it, 'cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have the recipe again.
And there it is. That's Richard Harris in MacArthur Park on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. And what a way to kick off our conversation with Dean. Dean, welcome to the show. Glad to have you here, man.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Now, I know you've been here before. You were here with John Hill during the Week in Review, but we haven't had you here in our studio for this show yet. And you're relatively new. How long have you been doing this? about 5 months?
It's actually almost 15 months now.
For the town, you've been here really that long?
It's gone very, very quickly.
Wowzers, that has gone quickly. I thought it was like 5-6 months maybe, you know, since the end of winter. Right, I don't know. Anyway, how's that been going for you?
Excellent.
Is it everything you hoped it would be and more? Or?
I love the job. I love the community. The subject matter is amazing. It involves so many different areas. Council's been extremely supportive. Mm-hmm. The staff at the town are wonderful people. Couldn't have asked for a better job.
What's the biggest pain in the neck you've discovered thus far? First off, when you got here, you're like, oh, my God.
Boy.
Can you get that specific at this point?
There's been so many different challenges, but all exciting. I mean, I think the biggest challenge and the focus, one of the areas of priority has been creating the division itself.
Right.
And so I've got to get that into place and get that mm-hmm. solid before we're really able to focus on a lot of the longer-term priorities. But, I mean, we don't have the luxury of just doing that, so there's been mm-hmm. a lot of areas that we've been working on over the last year, and we've had a lot of successes, a lot of achievement, and a lot of big projects.
You make a really good point, because this is a brand-new division at the town. This is how much the town has grown, listeners. For those of you that live and breathe Coburg, that have grown up here and been here for generations, this is the evolution of that kind of change. I mean, you know, I remember when I first moved here and we didn't have a community center. I say, where's the community center? People say, it's the Y. I'm like, well, that's a Y. That's not the community center. But, you know, it takes a long time for people to really pick up the notion that we need to have a full, separate, unto itself, parks and recreation department. Not just a committee, but a full-on department.
So, Dave, you'll remember that in the early to mid-90s, there was a parks and recreation manager in the form of Wayne DeVoe.
Right.
He was working for the town, but that ended in the mid-90s. So it's really been since then, it's got to be at least a decade or more since we've actually had somebody that is solely responsible for this kind of thing. And I believe your mandate's a little larger because you don't just do parks and recreation, you also do culture. So how does that expanded mandate affect the kind of work that you're doing? What are the kinds of cultural things that you're talking about?
Well, it's broader than that, in fact.
Wow.
So part of the challenge has been pulling together different departments and units that have already existed. So Parks and Recreation has come over from Public Works. Mm-hmm. Community events and tourism have come from other areas, and the concert hall staff and that operation have also been brought over into this new division. Culture is a new responsibility, although I really look at the concert hall as really the foundation within the division of cultural responsibilities mm-hmm. because of the breadth of programming that occurs in the concert hall.
Does that include the art gallery as well?
No, the art gallery.
I mean, I know it's a separate entity unto itself, but is there some aspect of oversight there from the town?
Well, the town does provide funding.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
As far as I'm concerned, the art gallery is a tremendous asset for this community. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think the permanent collection is of national significance.
And, absolutely.
And I think we can certainly work with the art gallery to better promote that. And again, tourism is a part of this division, and so we need to look at all of the assets of the community and how best to promote them, both locally to residents, because there's a lot of things going on here that even residents don't always mm-hmm. know. So I think we need to improve the way that we communicate locally, but also externally, and really promote some of the hidden gems of the community, because it's not just the beach.
It's interesting that you say that, because, you know, there was some legal stuff that went on with the art gallery recently. But I think that one of the things that legal challenge for them did was actually increase their profile. I mean, a lot of people didn't realize just how extensive the collection was at the Northumberland Art Gallery at the Victoria Hall. And I think one of the offshoots of that, if you will, scandal, if you will, is that it made more people aware of just how important the gallery is. And I think we've seen attendance increase as a result. So
I'm also curious, though, in having tourism under your umbrella, it moves it out of the economic development sphere. How does it change the goals and objectives of the tourism and tourism promotion to be under your umbrella rather than the economic development side?
Well, I mean, tourism obviously has a direct impact on economic development and the local economy, but I think one of the advantages of having it as part of this new division is it gives us the ability to look across all of these important areas, the parks, the recreation, sport, tourism, the cultural assets of the community, and really being able to identify those strengths that really should be promoted and how best to promote them. So they you know, a lot of people think, how do all these pieces fit together? But I think they fit very nicely. Recreation parks go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. Culture, we're already involved in a lot of respects in culture in terms of both the concert hall, but also the breadth of community events. This year we have about 150 events occurring in this community, a huge number, and that's part of the cultural fabric of Coburg.
Because one of the challenges always with tourism is to be able to measure impact. So you have a program, but how do you measure the impact? And how do we see the economic benefit of that impact? Because you'll often hear, you know, oh, people come down to the beach and it's all full on a weekend, but, you know, the Main Street retailers will be saying, well, they don't come up and they don't buy from us, or, you know, they come in, they buy gas and they leave. How do you measure the success of tourism in the way that you're trying to manage it?
Well, there's it's a great question, very timely, because we're just about ready to launch a business survey as part of the waterfront planning that I'm sure we'll talk a bit about. But in the next couple days, we'll be sending out a survey to all the local retail and service-oriented businesses to get their perspective on the waterfront, mm-hmm. on tourism, sport tourism, and we're going to use that to really try to document, you know, the tangible impact of tourism on local businesses. The survey related to the waterfront planning that's currently available for all users closes on the 26th, but the preliminary results so far have overwhelming response from people that believe tourism is a really important part of the economy of Coburg. And I know there are people that believe a lot of these tourists come and don't leave any money, but realistically, with the thousands and thousands of people, they eat in the restaurants, they shop in the stores, they buy gas, they do all of these things, and it's just not realistic to believe that they don't have an economic impact.
But many rural communities depend on tourism. It's highly competitive. You get any weekend and you look at what's going on across Ontario, there is just so much competition, not only within regions, but across the province. How do you stay competitive when it's so crowded and there's so much demand for tourist dollars?
Well, and that's a good point, because, I mean, I've even had discussions with staff about that. Every community in the province and the country are all trying to do the same thing. I mean, they're all trying to bring people into the community to spend money. And businesses, I mean, a community like this is you know, a high proportion of retirement. And you know, the summer season is a really important economic boost through tourism for local businesses to you know, keep their sustainability throughout the year. And so I think the way we differentiate ourselves is really understanding those critical assets that we have and being able to promote them. And you know, the beach is an obvious example, and we're quite well known for the beach, but there are other aspects, and the art gallery, I think, is a good example of something that we can probably promote more. And the performing arts of the local community is amazing too.
Well, on that note, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, more of our conversation with Dean Hustwick, right?
Yeah.
Right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7.
Hi, this is Andrea Johnson. I'm very happy to announce that with my husband, David Long, we have created Northumberland 89.7's first husband and wife radio show. Isn't that right, David?
That's right, Andrea.
Every Wednesday from noon until 1, we will be discussing life, relationships, and all things great. Isn't that right, David?
That's right, Andrea.
So join us and our many guests as we chat candidly about true life events, struggles, and experiences. You can do the next part, David.
Thanks, Andrea. The Soul Kitchen, noon until 1 every Wednesday. Radio for the heart and soul on Northumberland 89.7. Truly Local Radio.
coming to any Long and McQuaid musical instruments in the month of June for our spectacular Monster Days sale. All sorts of in-store specials and 6 months no interest financing. Plus, special events every Saturday, including Half Price Rental Day, Guitar Setup Day, Customer Appreciation Day, and Canada Day. Monster Days, all month long, only at Long and McQuaid. Check out long-mcquaid.com to find out more.
Long and McQuaid, where the music begins.
Jim McGrath understands that as much as we don't want to talk about it, wills and estate planning is a responsible thing to do for you and your family. With his help, you can reflect on your values and wishes and have a legal direction to let others know what kind of health and personal care you would want if you could not speak for yourself. Jim McGrath has been a lawyer for over 30 years, and he understands the law, so you don't have to. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones to call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999.
Northumberland 89.7 is your source for local news and interviews with people in our community. Listen throughout the day and check out our complete programming schedule at northumberland897.ca.
And welcome back to the broadcast. Our guest in the studio is Dean Huswick. He is the director of Parks and Recreation for the town of Cobourg. And, you know, we've been talking about economic development. One of the things you sort of popped into my head is, you know, we've got some great features that we can exploit here as a town. And the rest of the county, there are all kinds of other features. And I know there was discussion in the past of, you know, coordinating events and making sure. I mean, we've done it in the past with some of the events we've had at the CCC where we worked with Port Hope as well. Are you seeing an opportunity to expand on that type of broad cooperation, not just within the facilities here in town? Because I know Rob's going to talk about some stuff coming up, but as well with, you know, some of the things that can be used cross promotion, if you will.
Well, I think there has been a fair bit of that done in the past, and I think there's always opportunities to enhance the cooperation, and those are certainly areas that we're going to be looking at and how we do that, because, you know, we're not so big here. You know, none of the communities, municipalities are big enough to be able to do anything on their own. So, for example, when we had the 55-plus seniors games this winter, we had hotels booked all the way, you know, in the entire area, all the way up to Peterborough. So, I mean, a games like that has true economic benefits for all of the communities of the area. So we have to work together because, you know, we don't have all of the resources or hotel and motel rooms that we need to have big events. And we have so many events. It's difficult to find any accommodations in the area on most of these weekends. And we've got a lot of sporting events, soccer tournaments, softball, I mean, volleyball. So these are all important initiatives that I think we do need to work with other areas and the regional tourism organization as well.
I'm interested in the waterfront plans, and I'd like to talk a bit about that. We've heard it talked about as a district. Can you tell me where that term comes from and why are we reframing this in the context of other work that's gone on before?
Council, this actually just went to Committee of the Whole on Monday. Council has reviewed their strategic plan and updated it for the last couple years of the mandate. And one of the initiatives, one of the priorities they identified was a waterfront district. And the rationale behind that is there is so much activity happening down at the waterfront regarding the beach, regarding all of the events and parking, the marina, the campground. I mean, it's an important part of the community. So being able to look at it holistically and be able to identify the types of expenses as well as revenue generating opportunities and how we leverage the tourism aspect to help us improve the waterfront, especially as we go into the waterfront planning and identify capital improvements. Those are all things that I think it's a natural area, just like we have a downtown business area, we have a heritage area. A waterfront district is just a natural geographic area to be able to deal with the types of issues that are all related.
But when you look at it physically, I mean, we're talking about two city blocks, from the downtown to the waterfront. Why is it so important to differentiate those, whereas we've seen plans in the past around downtown revitalization, the planning documents that put those two things together? Why is it so important to create two things rather than just keep the one?
Well, it's not necessarily to completely break it off from the other areas, because it can't. It has to be looked at in relation to the downtown. It has to be still considered as part of the heritage areas and the influences. It's really more, I think, of an operational perspective in terms of how do we budget, how do we coordinate events, and because the events are naturally having an impact on the parking. We're looking at revenue-generating opportunities through the planning process, and so how do they link in with the busy that busy district, and how do we leverage it for other areas? So we want to be able to bridge the waterfront to the business area, and so there's a lot of natural synergies that just go into the planning process, and operationally, I think it's important for us to understand how much is the waterfront costing and how much are we generating through various initiatives.
Because I know that there have been many, many, many plans dating back over the decades around downtown, around the waterfront, what's happening in the harbor, all different kinds of plans. How does this relate, or why are we even going mowing this grass again, it seems like?
Well, again, the waterfront district is really just, I think, more of an operational perspective. But the waterfront planning that we've initiated is a key component to implementing the Parks Master Plan that was completed a few years ago. It is taking what's in the plan. It's taking, actually, the consultants that we've hired, we've provided all of the various studies over the years. So they have all of that. They have the Heritage Master Plan, they have all of the municipal studies. It's not intended to recreate the wheel. It's take a look at everything that the town, all the planning documents the town has done, and there are components and designs that have been created in the past that we may want to retain. There are other areas that haven't had that focus, and so we want to fill in those gaps. So it's not leaving everything behind that's been created. It's building upon that and moving us closer to actual implementation.
One of the things that you see when you look over the literature, though, is you talk about waterfront design. And can you distinguish what is the difference between, say, a waterfront plan or a planning document and a design document?
Sure. Well, the plan, master plans often are conceptual designs. They're fairly high level. And we have a fair bit of a lot of work's been done in that area in the past. What we're wanting to come out of this process is, and this is council's expectation, and Councillor Brian Darling's the council coordinator, and he's providing great leadership on this front. And the intention is that not only are we going to consolidate a lot of the work that's been done in the past, but we've actually expanded it to look at the whole waterfront too, not just Victoria Park and the beach or the marina. I mean, we're looking at Monk's Cove and Lucas Point and various other aspects, but it's also taking it to the next level where the consultants working through all the consultation are going to identify specific recommendations on improvements, capital improvements over a number of years, but they're going to design them and provide cost estimates so that when we have and recommendations on how to structure those improvements, so that when it comes time to budget deliberations, if council approves actually implementing some of those specific ones, we've got the designs already. We can go out to tender and actually start implementing them as long as the money's budgeted.
One of the things that we saw with the downtown and the revitalization was they talk about the trailer park. And, of course, that gets everybody worked up. And it has for every time there's ever been a waterfront consultation, the trailer park becomes a spark for debate. Are we going to see a final plan for what's going to happen to the trailer park? Is something going to get decided this time, and will council act?
Well, if anyone that's completed the survey, and we have, I must say, the community engagement on the survey alone has been remarkable. We've had over 1,600 surveys completed, for a population like this, that's remarkable. The same consultants that are working with us did the waterfront planning in Kingston. They had about 600 surveys for the city of Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
We're more than double that for a community that's much, much smaller. So if you've gone through the survey, you see the breadth of the types of questions. And the campground has a section. We're asking specific questions to find out what people feel about the campground, what types of things we should be doing with it, what alternatives there are. So this process will certainly have some clear recommendations on what to do with each of these individual little nodes of within the waterfront, including the campground.
Well, one of the things that came up, this was brought to my attention by Ben Bird, an item that jumped out recently, is that they're going to be using development fees to cover expansions for the marina. That's the intention of the town. Now, according to provincial guidelines, you can't use development fees for a tourism project. That's just the provincial guidelines. The town's managed to get around that, though, by saying that the marina services are not provided in the regulation as an ineligible service. Furthermore, the inclusion of marina services within the 2016 DCBS is justified, as these services are designed to provide a service similar to that of Parks and Rec. So they're saying that their position is that the facilities being provided are provided primarily for the residents of Cobourg. It's not a tourism engine or a generator. Mm. But that's not how it's being sold, right? I mean, it's being put out there that, you know, the marina is a great place for tourists to come in here and come on in with your boat, and we're welcome to you, and we'd love to have more tourists come in that way. And so how do we balance that? How do we tell people of this community that, you know, we want to do this expansion? Because a lot of people think that the 150 new docks, the $3 million administration building, all of that's basically been put to rest. And yet now we find out the town's going to be covering those costs through developmental charges, which kind of contravened the provincial mandate for developmental charges.
Well, I think there's been a lot of misconceptions in the last week or so about the development cost charges, and specifically with respect to the marina. The previous plan included the previous expansion plans within the DCCs. That was simply kept in as an administrative placeholder for future marina costs. So I think a lot of people have seen that and said, oh, you've made a decision on expansion. There hasn't been any decision. That's why we're doing the waterfront planning. That was simply a holdover from what was already in the DCCs. We know there's going to be expenses related to the marina in the future, and as there will be for Parks and Rec generally. And so DCCs cover all of those areas. Doesn't mean you're committed to spending them on those. Those are placeholders, and council is always on an annual basis makes decisions on capital improvement. So, I encourage people not to make any assumptions around the fact that there's a placeholder in the DCCs.
Can they legitimately do that though? I mean, is that a reasonable argument for the town to make?
Oh, absolutely.
To taxpayers, because I mean, my understanding is it's in contravention of the provincial guidelines.
I mean, the marina, again, I think there's a lot of misperceptions around the marina in the community. We provide arena facilities, community center, the CCC. We provide parks. We provide endless services in the community for residents and visitors. The harbor, the marina, the campground, I mean, these are services. There's only about 30% of the slips in the marina that are transient. 70% are seasonal, which are local people.
So those 70% are primarily residents of Cobourg who've put a ship in the harbor.
Cobourg and surrounding area.
Okay.
And there's a lot of controversy and beliefs around what should happen with the marina. A lot of people think that it's all rich, you know, boat owners. You look at a lot of the boats. I mean, they're not all wealthy people.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, the waterfront plan is a user assessment. We're trying to enhance access to the waterfront. People enjoy it for many different purposes. People use the waterfront for beach volleyball. They use it for kayaking and canoeing. Mm-hmm. They use it for boating. They use it for swimming. We subsidize the CCC. We subsidize the beach. We subsidize everything in town.
Mm-hmm.
So when people are walking through a park, that park is subsidized because we're spending money maintaining it. So
sure, but I mean, the marina is supposed to be an entity unto itself, right? It has a separate operations group. They have a separate...
It's part of the division, just like the rest of the division. Okay. But, I mean, the marina does turn a profit, unlike our parks. Our parks don't turn a profit.
Right, but that's not their role, right? It's not the role of the park to turn a profit.
Well, recreation facilities in general don't are right. all subsidized.
Right.
And I know there's been controversy around the CCC and the level of subsidy. I've heard numbers that have been thrown out that are completely inaccurate. A study done by the National Recreation Park Association in the U.S. has identified that recreation agencies and facilities are generally subsidized at about 71%. The CCC is below 45% in terms of subsidy. So, you know, you can do whatever you want with numbers, but, you know, I'm focusing on the facts. The marina is turning a profit. There's not many of our recreational facilities in turn that in
town one of the, turn one of the profit. Things, though, with the marina and that area was that there was great infrastructure deficiency. And one of the things that happened when the last set of plans got turned down was there was question marks around the infrastructure. The East Pier is falling apart underneath. They've had to make a special dispensation for using it, especially during the Canada Day festivities. There was concerns around some of the infrastructure to do with the marina. What's happening with those shortcomings so that we don't see all of a sudden the East Pier disappear or one of the docks fall off when you go to get some gas?
Well, I think one thing that we're doing, and we talk about the waterfront district, so one of the things that I'm doing through the budget process is trying to clearly differentiate expenses and revenues.
Right.
So the marina is not the harbor. If we had no marina, we still have a harbor that needs to be maintained, and
yep.
that's going to cost a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So even if we were to eliminate the marina, which is turning a profit and bringing in revenue that allows us to cover off some of the costs mm-hmm. related to maintenance of the harbor, we'd have a major commitment there. And the harbor is also used for many other purposes. It's a Coast Guard station, so, I mean, we have obligations related to the harbor.
Some of the concerns, though, around the marina that came up during the big brouhaha that happened, I guess, a summer and a half ago, was that, you know, you say that marina is making money. It's a profitable entity. It's being run profitably. And yet, for whatever reason, the money that was supposed to be driven, because, again, the profits are supposed to be driven right back into it to maintain it, to keep the infrastructure up to date, to make sure the slips are viable and everything's working properly. And yet it was allowed to go into disrepair because, you know, and again, this is word on the street, if you will, that the money that was being made by the marina was actually being used elsewhere in the harbor front or being used elsewhere for beautification, but wasn't being used to maintain the infrastructure, the role for which those profits were supposed to be used. And that was really the concern. And now this concern about they're saying, well, now they're going to use the development fees to offset some of those increases. I mean, it's either an entity that can finance itself, and we're hearing from you that it is profitable, and I've spoken to other people, yeah, it is profitable. So we have to ensure that the money's being made are locked in to that so that it maintains itself. And that is a concern, especially now that we're, and as you say, this is not locked in stone either, but the fact that they're going to be using development charges, which is in some way in contravention of provincial guidelines.
Well, it's not, because, I mean, the marina services, the harbor, are recreational services, just like an arena is.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Okay, but there's a difference between something that is a benefit to tourism, which is what the marina is seen as, and the CCC or the beach or anything else, which is a service that's provided to the taxpayers for the residents.
I mean, the transient component of the marina mm-hmm. is not just for tourism, but it's also because it's an important location on the lake, and that's one of the reasons the Coast Guard station is located here because of the distance between other harbors. So Cobourg is a very important harbor and an important marina from that perspective. So again, you know, 30% of the slips are transient, 70% are not. So it's an important recreational use of our waterfront for local people, as well as tourists. And I think what's important is visitors often become residents. And
it's true enough.
So there's a big cycle here. You know, when people come here, they see how beautiful it is, they end up moving here. And so whether someone stays at the marina on a traveling boat or in a hotel or at the campground, it's still someone visiting town. Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of the slips there are for locals. And again, you know, we're providing a harbor for kayaks and canoes and dragon boaters. Mm-hmm. We're paying for that. We're subsidizing maintenance of the harbor for that type of use. We're dredging the harbor. We're doing different things. The East Pier, that's not part of the marina. I mean, that's and that has costs. So, I mean, what I am trying to do, as I mentioned, is, you know, ideally, long-term operations like the campground, the marina, can generate enough money to help subsidize the broader waterfront costs. And the campground turns a large profit. Some of it goes into a reserve. Some of it goes into general revenue to keep taxes down. So, I mean, that's why we're going to look at the waterfront, is where should the costs, you know, money generated down there, should they, you know, stay in that area rather than bringing money from, you know, general taxes. I mean, at the end of the day, we have set expenses that we have to cover. So whether they're covered by taxes or they're covered by the marina or the campground revenue, they still need to be covered. And we're going to have additional expenses down the road. I mean, you mentioned the East Pier. We're putting money every year into maintaining that. So these are all important questions, but I think there's a lot of emotional reaction to the marina. I think a lot of it isn't necessarily based in fact.
Right.
And I know there's,
I think a lot of it, though, we're gonna go to a break here, but I think a lot of that is based on what we're being told versus what's actually happening. I mean, we were told, again, this is about what we're told from council, that the marina was a self-efficient, standalone kind of operation, and that it should have been able to cover the cost itself for the marina expansion. But then we find out that the marina expansion is being done so that they can cover costs that they weren't able to cover before because money was being used elsewhere. And that's really where the concern came from residents. We'll be right back after this break, listeners, with my guest, Dean Hustwick, air on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7, where we ask you to consider this.
Start your week off the right way with a new lunch hour talk show right here on Northumberland 89.7. Jeff Kane presents Northumberland Focus, Mondays at noon following the news. Jeff and his guests will be chatting about the important issues affecting Northumberland County, personal finance, local business, community events, and much more. That's Northumberland Focus with Jeff Kane every Monday at noon right here on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.
Hear ye, hear ye. Professional Hearing Services is proud to announce we are now open in Newcastle. Locally owned, you can find us at 300 King Avenue, downtown Newcastle, kitty corner to Tim Hortons Plaza. Ask about the latest in rechargeable technology. Book a hearing test with one of our licensed audiologists today. That's Professional Hearing Services, 905-987-5252. Improving the quality of life of all we meet through better hearing. Hear ye, hear ye.
Northumberland 89.7 is a not-for-profit, volunteer-run radio station. We are proud of the unique service we provide to this community. If you enjoy our programming and would like to help us continue as Truly Local Radio, you can contribute through our website. Just click on the donate button at northumberland897.ca.
Looking to change your mind? Grab a cup of curiosity and join me Thursdays at 12 noon. For conversation with cutting-edge thinkers that invite you to think differently about yourself and the world. Update your thinking, the Jan Sprague Show, here on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.
When it comes to computers and the internet today, it's hard to know who and what to trust. When something goes wrong, you could call your daughter, your brother-in-law, that kid who mows the lawn, or you could call Computer Solutions, your neighborhood computer professional. Computer Solutions, located at 208 King Street East in Colborne, is open 6 days a week. They have ample parking and convenient hours, plus you can arrange to have your system picked up or dropped off right from your door. Call Computer Solutions today at 905-355-3622 or stop by their store in Colborne at 208 King Street East. Computer Solutions, your neighborhood computer professional.
It's a show featuring music that's a little left of center, right of center, and most times right on the edge. It's Country Outlaws and Alternatives. Hi, this is your old pal Rusty, inviting you to join us each and every Monday night at 9, playing the music that many other station staff love, but just won't play. It's an hour of countrified music with soul and just the right amount of cool. It's Country Outlaws and Alternatives, Monday nights at 9. Right here on Northumberland 89.7.
Northumberland 89.7 is open to anyone who is interested in helping us serve the community. If you'd like to find out more about volunteering, call us at 905-372-2391 or email us info@northumberland89.7.ca.
And welcome back. That, by the way, is our last break of the hour. I just rolled them all into one. I know maybe the producers in general are probably not happy about that, but I'm doing that because we need to have more time for this conversation. Rob, I know you have a question.
Thank you so much. One of the things you've been talking about in just trying to understand the waterfront is the differentiation between a marina and a harbor, the East Pier, the parks, the trailer park. All that starts to feel very complex, but also it represents a complexity of uses. And we also, on top of that, have a natural area that a lot of people are very proud of. We have all kinds of ducks use our harbor for a resting ground as they go both north and south at different times of the year. We have the naturalized beach on the far side. How do you negotiate the complexity of the space plus the complexity of the uses that you're going to somehow come out and build a consensus out of all of that?
Well, and I think that's really important because one of the difficulties is when you pick a particular issue, you can always have two sides on any given issue. So when you look at just the campground, well, you're going to have people that support it and people that don't support it. Not a lot of middle ground. I mean, there's people that don't care one way or another. And so when you look at the survey, we've tried to ask a broad enough range of questions on the whole waterfront, and we are dealing with a very broad area here, and so I think the whole engagement strategy has been designed to get out there and talk to all of the individual community groups, user groups. We've had over 30 meetings with stakeholder groups of one kind or another, trying to get their perspective. And the survey, again, I said, you know, over 1,600 responses. We're now going out with a survey that's specific to stakeholders, and we're going to be doing the business survey. So we've had public open houses. We've had a charrette. Our next public open house is at the Columbus Center on Tuesday, 4 to 6 and 7 till 9, two different sessions exactly the same to accommodate people. We're going out of our way to ensure that anyone that's interested in the waterfront has an opportunity to bring forward their opinions.
Where again is that location for that public consultation on Tuesday?
At the Columbus Center.
At the Columbus Center. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
I want to come out of this, and I know Council and Councillor Darling are very committed to ensuring that we have a fulsome engagement strategy, which is in line with the engagement policy that Council passed a few months ago. We don't want to be criticized for not engaging people. And even this week on Monday, we distributed postcards to every household in town, notifying them of the survey and our next two public meetings. So if you're interested, you're getting engaged, and through that, I think through the results of the survey in particular, with a huge number like 1,600, I mean, that's beyond what Ipsos Reid does for their types of polls based on a population of under 20,000 like Coburg. So we're going to have some really solid stats on what people think and what they believe on all of these different parts, and that's going to make it, I think, easier for us to be able to say the community has spoken, and here's the direction that we're going to head in.
But always in those types of situations, there are tensions. So, for example, there's environmentalists and naturalists who want to see the West Beach be naturalized, and you've got a beautiful boardwalk, and you can walk along there, and there's lovely plants. And then on Canada Day, the whole place packs up with people so everybody can go down and watch fireworks, and everybody tramples all over everything, and people get upset. We had the issue in the harbor around docks and usages, and there were people who were tense about, you know, we don't want to expand. We want to have space so that people can canoe and do other uses. It's fine to say you're going to have this great document that's going to say this is what the general will of the people is, but within that, there still remains certain levels of tension. How do you move forward then? Is it just to say, okay, this is the most popular thing, so we're going to do this? Or how do you balance that so that you don't have people outraged or walking around huffing and gruffing behind every initiative that comes up after that?
Well, I think there's a couple things that are really important. One is we need to be dealing with facts instead of, feelings. Perceptions, feelings, emotions.
Yeah.
And if you're able to take the emotions out of it, then you're able to have a real conversation. So I think through all of these meetings and the survey, we're going to have some facts in terms of what people believe. I mean, there are people that say we should just cut off tourism, don't allow any more tourists to come in, they're not important to the community. Well, we're asking questions like that in the survey, and I think the results are going to show that tourism is an important part of the local economy. And so when you're able to move beyond misconceptions and have real conversations, it gives us a framework to begin. And I think what is also important is what we're trying to tell groups is compromise is part of the democratic process. I mean, you can't, no one group is going to get everything that they want mm-hmm. on any given issue. I mean, one of the reporters, when we first launched this process, one of the reporters asked us, how are you going to deal with criticism and opposition to certain recommendations at the end of this process? I said, it's inevitable. I mean, not everyone is going to support every recommendation the consultants bring forward. Not everyone is going to support decisions that council makes afterwards. But in a democratic process, you have to make decisions based on what you think is the greatest benefit for the greatest number of people. And so I'm confident through the results of this engagement, we will be able to meet the broader needs of most groups and most individual users. So you can't, it's not as simple as, from this line over, it's going to be natural and you're not going to touch it and no one's going to be able to walk on it versus everything, on the east of this line is going to be different. I think it's a bit of a compromise and respecting broader needs, and that goes, that's where the design creativity comes in.
Because one of the things that happened, and it's happened a number of times, is when we get talking about the use of Victoria Beach and Victoria Park, and the tourists that come and use it, and we see it every weekend, it just packs up, and there's been a tension around how people perceive that. And oftentimes there's been tinges of racism that has come out because one cultural group does one thing one way and other people behave another way. And there's been efforts sometimes to try and dissuade people to come. There's been grousing. You hear it in coffee shops and talking to people on the street about, those people coming here. How are we going to deal with those kinds of things? Because I know in some of the consultations you've already done and you've made public, one of the things people complain about is the crowds along the waterfront and the tourists that come and the people that break the rules. And oftentimes that's an inference towards these kinds of things. How do we deal with that?
That's a good question. I mean,
I think the federal government's trying to figure that out.
we're dealing with human beings, and people naturally are some people aren't going to follow the rules, and it doesn't matter whether it's Coburg, Toronto, or Timmins. That's reality, and we just have to deal with that. I think I think a lot of it is about understanding what the broader community wants instead of little pockets of opinion, and our expectation is that we will be able to shed some clarity on many of these issues. And I think you're also going to see that the vast majority of residents attend the events that we have, because the events that we have aren't just for tourists, they're for residents. And again, they are an important part of the cultural fabric of this community and what makes living here so wonderful. And so I think through this, you need to differentiate, the broad opinion versus the fringes. And and again, there are going to be people that don't want any events, don't want tourists. We can't control that. It's a beautiful community. People have been coming here as visitors for generations mm-hmm. and hundreds of years, exactly because of what it offers. And it's becoming an even more beautiful community. So I think we need to take pride in it. And, and what is a visitor? I mean, people that live here have family and friends come from out of town. They're visitors. They take them down to the beach. They mm-hmm. take them to the parks. They take them to the events. Those are visitors. Those are tourists. they might be invited tourists, but they're still tourists, and many of those people end up moving here. So
it's
a complex process.
I think we need to start to do things like embracing diversity. I know that this weekend there's a big multicultural event that's happening in Port Hope over at the Memorial Park. It's a huge opportunity for us here in the community, both Port Hope, Coburg, and all around the county, to get out there and realize just how many, if you will, visitors are no longer visitors who are actually residents in our community. And I think it'll probably go a long way in maybe assuaging some of these bogus concerns. And that's the only way I can look at them. They're just bogus concerns. I want to thank you for being here, Dean. Always a pleasure to meet anyone who works for the town. Any one thing you want to say just to wrap it up?
Just wanted to say... Councillor Suzanne Seguin is the coordinator for community services, and one of the next big priorities is a cultural master plan that we've started preliminary planning for. But that's going to be a focus next year after we get through the waterfront planning. The cultural assets of this community, and I think, you know, as we evolve and develop our culture and the performance opportunities here, that's going to be important for understanding diversity and promoting diversity as well. And I know Councillor Seguin is very excited to be leading that initiative.
Well, we are too. And I want to thank Rob for being here for our weekly installment where we ask the listeners to consider this. Thanks to Dean Huswick, the Director for Parks and Recreation and Culture, obviously here in the town of Coburg. We're going to take you out. A reminder, we don't write the world at Truly Local Radio, but we do bring it to you each and every day. Here's Rush and Lakeside Park.